What's up, literacy advocates? I'm your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Andrea Trudeau. She is a middle school librarian in Deerfield, Illinois. She's been in education for 23 years. She's been a classroom teacher for 16 years, mostly serving eighth grade ELA. She's currently pursuing her PhD in instructional technology from Northern Illinois University. She likes to call herself a no-shush librarian, and she's won the AASL Francis Henney Award in 2020. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Hi, everyone.
No shush librarian. What do you mean?
So I really like to break the mold. You know, there's this stereotype of this pearl clutching cat lady, shushy librarian.
Yes.
And I always joke if that's who they were looking for when they hired me in this role, they got the wrong gal, because you come into my space and there's music playing. It's very active. You might see me standing on a table to get a good picture. So it's a really kind of, I learning is noisy and messy, and my library will reflect that when people come and visit.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Why do you think that that's better? And why do you think people don't think that that's the way it should be?
I think it's better because, you know, I work in a middle school, and I've just, in my years working with students, I think the more that they can engage with each other and talk and collaborate and move about, I think they perform better. And more importantly, they're more excited to be there. If you're kind of forcing this compliance of sitting in this one space the entire period, being quiet, I think it's not responsive to students' needs. And then you have students that I don't think they're going to show their full potential because they're more focused on being quiet and sitting still than being their authentic self and being allowed to explore and be, you know, and have fun.
Yep.
Like, school should be fun. It's okay to have fun.
Agreed. So the main topic that we're going to talk about today is alternative assessment. And Andrea, you've done your master's thesis in alternative assessment. Why was that such a compelling topic for you?
So it was an interesting journey. I've always been someone who loved school. I always knew how to kind of play school well. Like, I could, you know, get a great GPA. I could
Same.
Do well on the test. Yeah, I knew the game of school. So as an educator,
what was your ultimate hack for getting good grades on a test? I've got one. I'm curious what yours is.
Oh, I have to think about that. I mean, I remember just taking those ACT prep classes and just learning how to just take the test and eliminate the answers. But I was a big fan of just like memorizing things. And then it would become a brain dump the moment I took the quiz. And then if you were to ask me like a week later what I had was supposed to know, it was gone because it wasn't meaningful to me because I just memorized it for the short term.
Here was my ultimate hack.
Yeah.
So this only works if you have a teacher that gives you a study guide, say a week before the test. They're like, here's a study guide, study this stuff for the test. It only works in that situation, but through college, I got a lot of that. And I got that in high school as well. And what I learned was, and I don't know if this is just me, the way my brain works, but if I put absolutely no effort, none whatsoever, into memorizing anything, and just the night before the test, or better yet, an hour before the test, if I could make that work, I just speed read the study guide. When I go to take the test, all I'm bubbling in is anything that sounded familiar. And boom, I would get A's consistently.
That sounds like what my 14-year-old does. You and my son, Garrett, would get along.
It's a terrible assessment of my actual knowledge.
Right. Well, yeah, because it's just like me memorizing, you know, I'll talk to him a couple of days later. He's completely forgotten it because it's not meaningful or memorable at that point.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off.
No, but that was amazing.
It's so true. Like, and I had a bunch of hacks like that, but that was, to me, that was the, anytime I got like a 3-page study guide, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, perfect. I'm going to tune out all week long and just right before the test, I'm going to speed read that study guide. And yep. I didn't treat college right. Or maybe I did.
Because, yeah, you know, figured out the system.
The way that I treated college was like, and I never even finished college. I dropped out 6 credits away from a bachelor's. The way that I treated it was like, I treated it as if the grades mattered. And what I've learned as a 31-year-old is that your college grades didn't matter at all. They don't matter at all. The only thing that matters is, did your education position you well in the market? And did you form relationships that helped accelerate your career? I can't think of a thing about college outside of those two things that for the majority of people actually mattered.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with
which
you.
Which is a terrible statement about college, in my opinion. Anyways, this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about alternative assessment. Okay. But you have one of your kids is not good at test taking. Is that right?
Yeah. So, well, now both, I would say, but my older son has generalized anxiety. And so the moment there is, like, I think of him when he had to do this rocket math as a kid, where you would have like a minute and you had to quickly solve as many. Oh, that would cause a meltdown in our house, because the moment you have to do that, you see all these questions, you've got problems, you have to solve them all, and you have a time limit, he would freeze and he would be crying. And so as he's gotten older, you know, obviously he's in high school now, we're not crying over it, but it definitely gets him very anxious. He will have panic attacks. And so it causes a lot of problems. And what's sad is that if you take him out of a test and just have a conversation about the topic, or have him demonstrate his learning through building something, he will knock your socks off. The way his brain thinks is so creative, but the tests don't demonstrate that. And unfortunately, he's in a district that is oftentimes the assessments are very traditional, just even the classroom assessments. And so I don't think they really demonstrate what he's capable of doing.
Yes. Why do you think as a society we're so addicted to the types of assessments that we give out?
So I think, you know, as I've been thinking about this topic, you have these companies that are making these tests, and then we've, as a society, have connected these tests to, you know, community. So if you want to move to a community, you're looking at the test scores to see how good the schools are. And so that's linked to like the value of your home. And it's putting a lot of pressure on kids and teachers. And as I said before, I just don't think it really dumb it, but think about it, and think about the money that's involved. Now you have kids that aren't achieving. And so now you have these companies that are creating these big multi-million dollar programs that these districts are buying to now remedy whatever the supposed issue is. I mean, to me, it's about money.
Yeah. So where I'm curious to take this conversation then is simultaneously, what's the solution that's best for kids? And then how could a solution like that be implemented into a society that is used to doing things that way, where it's like, this is how we determine where the schools are that people want their kids going to and all of that kind of stuff. So
I mean, ideally you get rid of the tests, but we're working in a system where the tests are going to be there because the government is driving that. I mean, this spring when the government demanded that we still have our state testing, you talk to any educator, we all know this is a really bad idea right now. We have kids that are, you know, you have some that are learning remotely. We haven't seen them in person all year. You have kids that are dealing with depression, anxiety. They're not able to attend to a test, but we just finished our IAR, our statewide test last week. So assuming that's still in place and we have to live within that reality, I think that within schools, we can get creative with the way that we meet standards. So, you know, when I first started teaching, it was all like quizzes, tests, papers. Yeah. Okay. So that's how we assess kids. Well, over time, I started realizing, I used to do something called Project Choice. And it was like so groundbreaking in the late 90s to say to a kid, okay, we just read this novel. And instead of writing a paper, I want you to demonstrate your understanding of like the key themes of the novel or character development. And you're going to create, you're going to determine how you want to show me that. So kids would design a project, and sometimes they would want to write a paper still, fine. Sometimes they would create some kind of really cool board game. Other times they might interview someone and compare, contrast a character with like a real life person. So they would come up with these incredible ideas. And so at the end of the day, I was still able to take a rubric and use the standards and score it. But every kid's assignment looked totally different. And it was like their own, and it was creative. And as a teacher, I enjoyed it more because I wasn't reading 90 of the same paper. I was looking at 90 different projects where the kids were demonstrating their learning in all different ways.
Yeah. If I could have my way of being assessed, like for just about anything, it would be a conversation. Like, let me demonstrate my knowledge by having a conversation on this topic with somebody. And like, it wouldn't even have to be the teacher. I could just pull anybody aside and be like, hey, you and me, let's record a conversation about this thing. And that's how I can demonstrate my knowledge of it. And like, clearly that's the case, because I have like 4 podcasts that I host.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite way to learn anything. Yeah. But that would be my choice. And so I've been advocating for a while that that schools should have classroom podcasts, if for no other reason than just to provide an option for demonstrating knowledge. Because it's not that hard to just record yourself having a conversation with somebody. Well, at least for certain personality types, it's not that hard. Definitely for mine.
Well, right. But that's why, like, you as a student would have that choice. Another kid may want to try something else. Let them try that. And so I'm fortunate to be in a really innovative school where most teachers here are willing to give kids voice and choice. And so we kind of teach them all different tools they can use and kind of lay a foundation every year. We're like, okay, these are some tools that we have available to you, but now go do something with them. And so they come up with all kinds of cool things. So we do have kids podcasting. We have kids doing stop motion video. We have kids, you know, creating things with Makey Makey. I mean, they do all kinds of incredible things here. And I think it just is a testament to how you can take a traditional system, but, you know, get creative within it. And our kids perform very well on the tests. And I think it speaks to using alternative teaching methods and assessments during the school year.
Why do you think most schools don't want to adopt that kind of assessment?
I think it boils down to the culture and climate. If you're in a school where if you try these things and it's seen as like going rogue, you know, because the tradition is the tradition. It's the quizzes, the tests, and the papers. So that's sort of the expectation. So if you're in a place where they expect you to follow tradition and stick with the curriculum maps, and suddenly you want to try something new that's off the page, you have to have someone there to support you. And I'm very grateful to be in a school where they allow us to be innovative. They actually encourage it and they celebrate it. I know of educators in schools where they want to do these things, but they feel stifled, or they're just flat out told like, no, you're not going to do it. You have to do it this way. We're all going to do it this way. And so I think if you give teachers a chance to be creative and fly, I think they can do some amazing things. They just aren't always given that opportunity, given the, you know, the leadership in their district.
If you find yourself, let's say you're a teacher that wants to do alternative assessment, you believe it's the right thing to do regardless of what anyone thinks. What do you think is the best thing for that teacher to do? Is it to quit and go work for a school that doesn't feel that way? Or are there steps in between? What do you think they should do?
I think there's a couple things. One, I think you got to find your people. So if you're in a school and you're literally the only one that's going to do this, you're going to feel pretty isolated and frustrated. So maybe there's not someone in your school, but maybe reaching out. Like for me, Twitter has been an incredible platform to find other kind of untraditional librarians and find my people and support that way. So I think finding someone out there that's doing that to be able to bounce ideas off of them and get that support and camaraderie. And then I think it's about starting small. So when I started to try these things in my own school, I had colleagues that were really, they weren't comfortable with the idea of like breaking the mold. So the first year I would do it by myself, and then I would check in with them and say, hey, this is what I did. This is how it turned out. Do you want to try it? And sometimes they were just willing to dip like their toe in the water. But I think for some people, throwing it all out and trying something completely new is very scary. So I think you have to kind of meet people where they're at. So if you have colleagues you're working with, trying to see like, how can I get the buy-in? But then I think it's about demonstrating to admin and leadership how what you're doing is having a real impact. So I think there needs to be some data collection there to demonstrate like, hey, when we did it this way, look at how much better it turned out, and providing like qualitative and quantitative data for that.
Do you think we could live in a world with no standardized testing? Like, do you think that's an even a possible world, or what would collapse if we had no standardized testing?
So when I was doing my thesis work, I was looking at how in Illinois at that time, they were doing something, and it's been like 15 years now. It's a long time ago that I did this, but they didn't have kids, certain kids that had special needs did not have to do the standardized test. They would do a portfolio. So they had, you know, different products, you know, assignments, papers, well, I guess now it'd be like links to materials as well. And that demonstrated your learning and you were still evaluated on a rubric. So, I mean, I think that would be incredible to be able to, instead of having a standardized test, to be able to like have a portfolio or have like some kind of website demonstrating your learning. It still can be standards based, because I'm not saying like, let's throw away the standards. I think it's helpful to have something to work towards and have sort of these benchmarks. But to get away from this, like, I don't know, we lose so much instructional time with these tests. They stress people out. You have teachers that are teaching to the test. That's so, it's such a waste of time. I think if we focus on the standards, which is really what the goals of the standardized tests are anyhow, and have the kids demonstrate their learning through something like a portfolio and evaluate that, you're still getting data to show like, what do they understand? Did they grow? And they're doing it in a way that is individualized for them.
Yeah. What's the fear? Like, maybe I need to talk to a sociologist. I would love to hear, to hear from somebody who thinks, you know, big picture society, maybe an economist, what are the ramifications of like a huge sweeping systematic change of the way that we do testing?
I wonder if it's going to just, I mean, it would be so much more costly to do it that way. Cause think about it. You can just like scan these things in, you get the scores. Although I'll tell you, with a lot of these state tests, we just took it. So we took it in late April. We may not get the scores till like September or October. So think about how much a kid has grown in that amount of time. You know, if we want to get this data to help drive instruction, it needs to be immediate so that we know, okay, you know, Johnny's struggling here, here, and here. Now I know what I need to go work on. But when you're getting it months later, how's that beneficial?
Do you think it's not something that we could rely on teachers, like the professionals that have studied for oftentimes 6 to 8 years and devoted their lives to a subject matter to be able to say, you know, this is where so-and-so is at, and just like let that be the definitive answer for that year?
I would love that. And this has always been a big complaint of mine in education, that a lot of times the public thinks because they went to school, they know school. I don't go to my dentist and tell them how to fill a cavity. Just like I don't always appreciate non-educators telling me how to do my job. Like I've been trained, I have experience. So at any point, if someone wants to sit me down and say, how's this kid doing? I can tell you, we'll have a great conversation. I can match it up with the standards. So I think the main concern would be, though, is you've got to have inter-rater reliability. So if you're doing this portfolio assessment, you want to make sure that teachers are trained enough to know how to accurately assess. But we already do that right now with our teacher evaluation system. We have a whole teacher evaluation system based on a rubric. Our administrators have to go through training. They have to make sure that they are aligned with inter-rater reliability. And that system's been working. So, and it's the same thing. It's observation and it's portfolio. So why are we not doing that for our students?
Yeah. Well, Andrea, this has been a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. How can listeners connect with you on Twitter?
So you can find me at @Andrea_Trudeau. And I would love to connect with librarians and other educators. Looking forward to connecting with you.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.